You're listening to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast, a product of the Oregon Basketball Coaches Association. To learn more, visit our website at or.nhsbca.org. Welcome to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. I'm Derek Duman, OBCA Vice President and Boys Basketball Coach at West Albany High School. Today, we're joined by Phil Vessel, Boys Basketball Coach at Southridge High School. Coach, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well.
Great. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to speak with us. Coach, I'd like to start the podcast by giving you a chance to introduce yourself to our audience. Can you tell us maybe a little bit about yourself, your coaching journey, and how you got involved in coaching high school hoops?
Yeah, for sure. Well, I'm an Oregon transplant. I grew up in Minnesota, just outside of the Twin Cities. And as a kid, I was just a basketball junkie. The joke with my extended family is I never went anywhere without a basketball. It was just something that I fell in love with at an early age, played it all the time. And as I got out of high school and I ended up at the University of Portland as a walk-on is when I started recognizing that I wanted to become a coach. And so I played for Larry Steele, actually at UP, met some good people there, and then I don't know if you're familiar with the University of Portland, but it's a bit expensive to be a walk-on. So from there, I went over to Portland State and just got my degree. And I started running camps, which is interesting because it was camps for Tualatin Hills Park and Rec and Cedar Hills Park and Rec. And here I am, you know, finishing up my college degree while I was doing that. And it really kind of filled my tank a little bit and made me realize that's what I wanted to do. From that point, when I graduated, I hooked up with Chemeketa Community College and worked with Dave Abnerholden down there, who's done an outstanding job at Chemeketa. You know, he's won some NWAC championships, and I was fortunate enough to be on his staff when we won an NWAC championship. And then I spent a few years over at Warner Pacific College working with Bart Valentine, who's a mentor and still a great friend of mine. And it was really fun at Warner Pacific. You know, I just loved the atmosphere, and it was a Christian school, and had such a great experience. But I also got to work with guys like Eric Bukula and Tal Wold, who are both great basketball coaches in the state of Oregon, high school coaches, and you start building that coaching tree. And from there, I just ended up getting into high school basketball. You know, I was ready to dig in, and ended up at Hood River Valley High School for a few years, which was a tough job to get going, especially when it was just four levels and we were 4A and facing Kelly Bookin and Redmond High School. And, you know, Marty Lunin was over there and they're winning state champ. That was where I jumped in. That was one of our first league games that we had. So I was fortunate enough to end up at Southridge, and that's how I got to where I'm at.
Very cool. Can you talk a little bit about maybe some of the things you learned at the college level that you've brought with you to the high school game?
Well, I tell you, working with Bart Valentine was an awesome experience. You know, I got to Warner Pacific, and he is just starting and kind of bringing basketball back. And so I think what I took away more than anything was I was learning how to coach when you don't have a lot of talent. You know, when you start a program up at the college level, it takes time to bring players in. And so we had some players there. Actually, Dan Munson, who has been a very successful high school coach, was a player on the club team at Warner Pacific and ended up playing for us there. And but finding ways to beat teams that are more athletic, have better talent, I learned a lot of that from Bart Valentine. And, you know, one thing that was really cool is the recruiting piece was going out and trying to find those kids that had the intangibles, because we weren't necessarily going to get the best, most talented kid, but we could definitely find some of those kids that maybe could believe that they could beat better players just because they could outwork them. And so those things were things I took away from it.
Very cool. Now, I know, Coach, you and your program are built on your non-negotiables. I think there's five things that you really emphasize with your players. And you talk about them a lot. Can you talk about those, what they are, and how you instill them throughout your program?
Sure. And, you know, non-negotiables are something that Dick Bennett, I remember watching him speak at a clinic, and it really resonated with me because at the time, you know, we were having some moderate success here at Southridge, but I was still a young coach trying to figure out the big picture, right? We all want to win, and sometimes we want to win to the point where guys that have potential, we play them even though maybe they don't make the best choices or they do things that you don't want them to do. And after kind of banging my head against the wall, my staff and I came up with these non-negotiables, and, you know, it's no big amazing thing. It's some simple stuff, but one was respect, and you got to treat everybody with respect, not just your coach or your teammates, but your teachers, you know, the bus drivers, and really instilling that into our kids. Being in the Metro League, one of the non-negotiables was be courageous in your pursuit of excellence. You know, when I got here, it's amazing how many coaches would be like, oh, you got to play Jesuit. Oh, you got to play Sunset. Oh, you got to play Westview. And I didn't recognize until I started coaching the kids here that it was ingrained into them that it's hard to beat those schools. And so we had to get past that and get to the point where, like, you just got to get in the ring and battle, right? And that's what it's about. And it doesn't matter who you play. And so that was a big one, and we talk about that all the time. And it helped us get over that hump from being kind of a middle-of-the-pack school in the Metro to one of the better teams. Commitment to player development is another one of our non-negotiables. I'm a gym rat. I've always been a gym rat. I love gym rats. And so in the off season, even during the season, I'll open the gym before school. After practice, we stay in the summertime. So we try to get our gym open and really have our kids recognize and understand that in the game of basketball, one of the things that you can really dictate is your skill level. Like, there's not a ceiling for skills. There's a ceiling for athleticism. You know, I can never be a guy that's going to jump out of the gym, but I could be a guy that's not going to turn the ball over and can shoot the lights out. So trying to instill that in players and have them recognize that. Another of our non-negotiables is build young men for life. And this is that big picture, holding kids accountable, teaching kids that you can earn opportunities in life. You know, even though maybe you aren't the most athletic or have the most potential, I'm teaching them how to prioritize and what that means. We always do some kind of volunteer work during our season and get out and give back to the community so kids can recognize what service leadership looks like. That's been a big thing for us. And then the last non-negotiable, and I think it's probably the most important, is enjoying the journey. Like, you got to have some fun with what you do. And it can be a grind, and I think some people – you think of fun and it's like, oh, everyone's laughing and joking. And we try to really get our guys to recognize enjoying the journey is that work you put in, right? The challenge of that you give to your teammates in building something special so that you look back and you smile about it. Like, oh, I miss that. I miss that camaraderie. I miss how everybody was on the same page. And we talk a lot about enjoying that journey and making sure that we're having fun with it. And we try to, you know, obviously incorporate some things throughout the season to make sure that we're not getting too serious. We're just playing basketball here.
Yeah, Coach, you talk about accountability, which I think is really important, especially at the high school level. But something I feel like that's become a finer line to walk, because it seems as though kids sometimes have a hard time differentiating between, you know, trying to hold them accountable and, you know, they might see it as picking on them or, you know, being demeaning towards them. Can you talk about how you continue to kind of maybe walk that fine line and ensure that kids understand what that accountability is and that they're not perceiving it the wrong way?
Yeah, that's a great point. It's difficult, right? And, you know, I always hear coaches say kids are different. You always come across some kids are able to really take coaching and embrace coaching, are excited about it. And some kids, you know, if you say anything, they drop their head. And so I think the first step in teaching kids how to be accountable is you got to build that trust and relationship with them. And the way you do that is coming at them with, you know, this is why we do these things. This is why I'm asking. And when the why starts to really sink into kids, then it becomes easier for them to recognize, like, okay, if I do these things, I earn the right to play. And, you know, it's definitely tough. especially I think with sophomores that are good players that think they should be maybe a varsity guy playing tons of minutes when you know they're going to be, but they want it right now, is teaching them how you earn your right. You got to work your way into that. But I don't know if there's one clear answer to that. It's just building that relationship with the kid.
Yeah. Coach, you mentioned a little bit, being in the Metro League, which has continuously been one of the tougher, if not the toughest league in the state. I'm kind of curious, you talked about trying to get your kids over the hump. How is being in the Metro League coaching against the likes of Pat Coons and Coach Potter and Nick Robertson? How has that helped shape you as a coach?
Well, the league has always been really tough. And I think when I first got here, I loved the talent level because I went from Hood River Valley to Southridge. I'm like, holy cow, look at this talent level I have. And we got off to some great starts. My first few years, we had these really good preseason records. And then you get into league play and you have these coaches that are so detail oriented in their scouting reports and taking things away that it helped me grow as a coach to recognize, okay, if I want to get these kids to move up and be more competitive, they've got to have game plans and understand why we're doing certain things. It took a couple of years, I think, for us to get over that hump of losing close games to where we started to win some of those close games. And it's a tribute really to how good our league is and how well it's scouted and how well it's coached.
Yeah. What is kind of your process for preparation look like? Let's say you're playing Jesuit on Friday night and you just played on Tuesday. How do you kind of prepare your kids for that matchup? Generically, what does that look like for you guys?
Well, the first thing is you got to go watch people play live. And, that's one of those things when I stepped away that was kind of nice to take a break. But I try to see all the opponents in our league, in the Metro League, try to see them play live at least twice. I love to get that third time. And sometimes it's my assistant coach who'll get that third one in and then get some film on them. So you got to figure out what they're good at. What do you need to take away? What do you need to be successful at and be prepared for? And then in practice, the biggest thing is you got to simplify it. And I think early on in my coaching career, I had scouting reports to be 3 or 4 pages long. And that's too much, right? It's just overload for these kids. And you're like, how come you're not doing this? And they're swimming. So being able to take away some of those things and say, these are the three things, or here are the, 2 or 3 sets we got to take away, and spending some time on those and practice. And making sure your kids understand the importance of doing that.
Yeah, Coach, analytics, I know it's something that has really come on strong in the last 5 to 10 years. I know a lot of programs use Huddle or used to use Crossover, now obviously using Huddle as well. How do you guys incorporate analytics into your program?
Well, quite a few years ago, I remember reading Bo Ryan's book when he was at Wisconsin, and he talked a lot about points per possession. Prior to that, I hadn't thought too much about, points per possession, or he just kind of looked at field goal percentage and points per game and those things. And so I started to dig in a little bit, and that's one of the main ones we use is offensively, we want to be above a 1.0 per possession, and defensively, we want to hold our opponents below a 0.9. is our goal, and we've had some success doing that. And so pointing that out to our kids so they can recognize, when you talk about, hey, we got to play possessions, and they're like, what does that mean? Well, it's the difference between giving up over 1 point, per possession, or lower than that if you could just get one more defensive rebound or one more stop. And so we talk a lot about that. After our games, we look at it. The other one that we use is effective field goal percentage. The game's changed with the amount of three-pointers that are shot and how much it impacts the game. And so probably 3-4 years ago, we started using effective field goal percentage as the way that we've measured how well we scored offensively along with points per possession, but then also how well we defended. So defensive points per possession, defensive effective field goal percentage. And that's kind of the basic ones that we would hang our hat on and make sure that our kids understood, and we shared it with them after the games.
Yeah. Is there anything that you have your assistants keep track of during a game that might influence decisions or maybe even playing time when you discuss it at halftime or between quarters?
Well, you know, Dave Nuff, who is my longtime assistant coach, who you know, retired a couple years ago from coaching, he would track, he'd do a possession chart, and he could tell me, hey, if you ran this set play, it worked this many times, or, you know, when we were in this defense, it worked this. And so he helped a lot on that side, be able to influence some choices and decisions we would make, you know, what to run or what defense to jump into. But other than that, you know, it's, you know, plus minus charts, we don't really do that during the game, but what we do track is deflections. You know, I have a assistant coach or a team manager tracking deflections. We also track what we call kills. You know, you hear that a lot at the college level, where three stops in a row is a kill, and how many times can you get that. And so we'll discuss those things at halftime, because we want to make sure that we're being disruptive defensively and also making sure we're getting stops. Like, it's, I think in high school basketball, if you play great D, you got a chance to be really successful.
Yeah, Coach, you alluded to this a little bit earlier and what you learned from Coach Valentine. But can you talk about maybe, you know, you said from going from Hood River to Southridge, you know, the talent level was much different. Can you talk about how you maybe have coached teams differently, those teams that maybe were your more talented ones that you knew were state tournament teams, versus your teams that were, I guess, for lack of a better word, an average high school basketball team. What did that look like? How did you coach them differently, if at all?
Yeah. Well, you do. And the thing about high school basketball is you're not recruiting, so you're developing talent. You get your teams vary from year to year on what pieces you have. And so when I have a talented team that you know, maybe all five of your starters can really play, and then you got a guy or two off the bench that can score a little bit, I tend to give more offensive freedom. And so we run less sets, and we give more freedom to play and try to put players in positions and let them go. Right. And then defensively, it's that same. We want to create more possession. So we would probably, a few years ago when we played you guys in the playoffs, that was the most talented team I've had. And we're trying to put a lot of pressure on you, and we want more possessions because we got a lot of guys that can play. And so the more possessions, the more shots. And so we're trying to get tempo going with that. When I have a team that's not as talented, you know, in my last year before I took a sabbatical, we were a good team, and I had some good players on that team. But we had to change everything. We weren't looking to be up tempo and run teams off the floor. What we're looking to do is, all right, now we're going to get back to playing possessions. We're going to execute a little bit more, have some more sets that we really want to get into and be great at and have some counters for. And then we also did a little bit more in our scouting report. So when your team's not as talented, you tend to have to try to take more away from your opponent, versus when you're really talented, you're letting them worry about that and you're trying to dictate. And so I think those are the two things that I really focus on depending on our personnel.
Yeah, and I'm glad you said that was your most talented team, Coach, because they were very talented. I remember I got to see that up close and personal. So, good stuff, Coach. We're going to take a quick break. We'll return with more from Coach Vessel right after this on the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast.
Are you an OBCA member yet? Sign up before January 29th and be entered for a chance to win one of two $25 gift certificates to Big Five Sporting Goods. Members that have signed up from the start of this school year will also be entered to win. You can sign up today at or.nhsbca.org.
Welcome back to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. Derek Duman here with Coach Phil Vessel. Coach, you know, you've kind of alluded to this a little bit. Last season, you took a sabbatical to spend time with family. Can you talk about what that year off was like for you and how it maybe impacted you as you come back to the coaching ranks this year?
Yeah, sure. It it was a really difficult decision to come to that. I was feeling pretty worn out. You know, there's a lot of different things going on that kind of contributed to needing to step away. And so having that break from, and I use the term grind, and I don't want it to be negative because I love the grind and I really missed it being away. But that grind of, you know, scouting, the grind of late nights, you know, heartbreak losses where you don't sleep well, getting up early to watch film, like all of that grind, it was nice to step away from that. And it made me really appreciate how much I love that and miss that. And so it kind of recharged my batteries that way. And at the same time, it was just phenomenal. You know, I have a daughter who, you know, last year was a first grader, and to be able to read to her at night and be there, was something that I'd been missing. And so that was very special to have that. And then I coached my son's youth team. So I didn't quite get all the way out of the gym. I was still in the gym and I spent a lot of time with our youth program at Southridge. I mean, we were rebuilding a youth program that had been decimated with the boundary change. And so, as much as it was a sabbatical, it was really a sabbatical away from coaching just the varsity team and running the whole program but I still hung around and worked with our youth program and started that process of rebuilding it.
Yeah, I know that, you're very involved in your youth program. You were for a long time, and obviously the boundary stuff, for those who aren't familiar, Mountainside High School was there, and that cut into your guys' boundary a little bit. And so, as you kind of are, I guess, rebuilding your youth program, what is it that you have done, and how are you kind of rebuilding and trying to build up that program again?
Well, you know, before we had such great numbers, and, you know, the way things work out, they work out and can only control certain things. And so with the new boundary change, we went from having, you know, almost 40 kids trying out for our eighth grade team to, after the boundary change, we had 12 kids show up for a tryout. And so that was that, like, that aha moment of, okay, we've got to figure out how we're going to do this different. And so, I've got some great people helping me out. Nawan Thompson is my youth coordinator. And we just got to work getting the word out and trying to recruit out of the new boundary that we have. Because what happened is we lost kids, but we didn't really get new kids. And that was what we needed. And so we've been working on that and making sure that kids that weren't aware of what's happening are aware of it. And through that process, we've got our numbers back a little bit, but we've changed. You know, we've always had, and I know every coach is different with their youth program. We always had 6th through 8th grade. I always had two equal teams, which is a real tough battle, to have with parents, because parents want one team that goes and blows everybody out, right? Because that's fun and that's great and we win all the time. And what I was doing was two equal teams, and they would take their lumps. You know, 6th grade, and then they'd start to be more competitive 7th grade. And then 8th grade, both of our teams would be pretty good because you got 10 starters every year, right? And then another few guys off the bench. And we had the numbers to do that. Now we don't have the numbers to do that at Southridge. And so I've, you know, we have kind of A and B teams is what we got going on. And we're just trying to really focus on the kids we have and do our skill development. And, you know, this would have been year 3 of the rebuild. And I feel like, with the help of Nawan Thompson, who's my youth coordinator, and some of the coaches that we've had in our youth program, you know, it's really come around, and I feel good about in a couple of years we'll be kind of back on track with kids coming up that are ready to contribute and excited to be a Skyhawk.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the toughest parts about, you know, being the head coach at the varsity level is finding those people that you want to help with your youth program. What does that process look like? I mean, do you interview every youth coach? Are there certain different boundaries that you give them or suggestions of things they have to do? What does that process look like within your youth program?
That's a great question, because as coaches, we always are looking for quality people. You know what I mean? Whether it's to help out at the high school level or the youth level, you know, you just got to find those people. And then you got to find a way to hold on to them without really having any money to give them, right? That's
right.
the nature of our job. We try to find coaches and we reach out and we talk to parents. Sometimes it's a parent coach. We were lucky enough last year I had Mustafa Hoff, whose son is in the youth program, and he's been a coach on our women's program. He was a coach on the men's side with me for a while, played at Oregon State. He was a coach. I was coaching a team, and then Juan had a team. So we had like this collection of coaches. Steve Naylor, who is one of the better girls varsity basketball coaches when he was at Tiger. His kids grew up in our pro. He was coaching. So you try to find these quality coaches and pull them in. And then we always do, I always put together a coaching clinic. I got a youth coaching handbook. And I try to spend a lot of time with our youth coaches and give them time and invite them to our practices, invite them to our games, and try to get them on the same page so that kids are having a great experience. And that's so important at those youth levels, that kids are having a great experience, because that makes them want to come back the next year and the next year.
Yeah, you mentioned, parents a little bit. Obviously, it's a youth level, but parents are still very much involved at the high school level. How do you kind of deal with parents within your program?
Well, it's one of those things where I think you have to over-communicate, and it took me a while to figure that out. I think as coaches, we get our feelings hurt, and we're like, hey, why are you coming and talking to me when this is what I do, and you're just a parent over there? And by kind of letting that go and not worrying about that and focusing more on, okay, I'm going to over-communicate. And so probably about 7-8 years ago, I started doing early in the season before we start playing games, or right as we start playing games, is I do a parent player coach. So all of us sit down together. When I say all of us, I'm talking about one player with his parents and myself. And I let the player talk about what they want to get out of their year and where they see themselves. And I let the parents share a little bit, and then I talk. And what I found when I started to do that is I found that there's a better connection between all of us, and a better trust. And I also found that I didn't get those emails anymore. From the parents, they'd get the email that'd say, hey, don't tell my son I'm emailing you, but they should be shooting more, or they should be doing this. Or like, I stopped getting those.
That's a cool idea. I like that, Coach. I think, through some of these questions and doing the podcast, I found more and more, I think it's nerve-wracking at first, as I'm sure it was for you, to invite the parents in a little bit, because there is kind of this natural wall, I think, that we try to build sometimes. But I think sometimes when you bring them in, it might be helpful more times than not, and that seems to be your experience as well.
Well, I think up front it is, and that's where what I learned was when I did this up front, it's not fun, right? You're practicing, you're trying to get going, you're trying to do all these things, and then carving out some time to do this, it's hard. But what I found is by doing that early, it made it so in January, February, those parent problems aren't there, because we dealt with them early and we opened up a line of communication. And sometimes we might even revisit, especially if a player is struggling. All of a sudden now I have a connection. It's not like I'm afraid to reach out to a parent and say, hey, this is what's happening. And so it's been good. It definitely is fearful. I actually have a funny story. It was one of my early years at Southridge, and I thought we had a really good team, and we had some good talent, and we were just losing close games. It was just one of those where you're snake bit, where someone's throwing in a shot to beat you here or there, and I could just feel the parent droop, and I wasn't doing parent meetings. I wasn't doing, like, you could just feel this kind of frustration. And I called a parent meeting. I'm like, I'm going to bring him in. And Dave, I remember Dave Nuss just looking at me. He's like, are you crazy? Like, what are you doing? And we brought him in, and I let parents, some of them weren't happy. But what it did is it really enabled me to see what, when these players went home, what they were hearing from their parents. And it allowed me to pull some of those kids in and talk to them. And it was the turning point of our season. We ended up having a great run and finishing really strong, when we got rid of all that tension that was going on. And so that was the first step in learning. You got to deal with parents, and you got to make sure that they recognize what their role is, but also that you value them.
All right, Coach, I'm going to switch gears on you here just a little bit. I want to talk to you about your 1-3-1 half-court defense. It's something that you guys have had a lot of success with in the past, and it's something just a little bit different. Can you talk about how you guys use that and what it is you like about that defense?
Yeah, the 1-3-1 has been good to us over the years. You know, as a coach, I think it's important to have a change-up. You know, sometimes you're a really good man-to-man team, but you just come across a team that executes so well, and are you able to adjust? And the 1-3-1 has been something that, you know, we can jump into, and it's won us a lot of basketball games. And I run it a little bit different than a traditional 1-3-1. We try to get more pressure on the ball and really just be disruptive in the passing lanes and take away, you know, teams' ability to kind of look around and survey and see what's happening against kind of a flat 2-3 zone or something. It's that constant pressure, and then kids have to make plays out of it, right? So it can sometimes speed the game up. Teams start taking quick shots, and it allows us then to all of a sudden we're able to get out on the break. And, you know, I've had some really talented kids at the top of that 1-3-1 that can get a steal out of that, and then now it's just a run out layup. So some of it's personnel driven, but it's definitely been a good defense for us.
Yeah, how do you, because I know you run it differently sometimes, where maybe you put a post in the bottom, or sometimes you put a guard on the bottom spot. How do you kind of determine what type of player goes where in the zone?
That's a good question. I started out, when I first started running it, you know, I'd learned, you know, you research everything you can as a coach. Like, okay, I'm going to do this. I got to find out as much as I can. And what I found was you want to put a quick guy at the bottom who can get corner to corner. And so that's what we did early with it. But what I found is if you put a 6'2 shooter in the corner and you got a 5'11 point guard trying to run corner, you know, you're not really getting a great contest. And so the defense evolved to where I'm trying to get a kid who's 6'4, 6'5, or 6'3, someone with some pretty good length and athleticism, so that you can contest those corner threes, because that's a weakness of the defense. And, you know, by putting some height on that and some length at that bottom spot that gets side to side, it all of a sudden makes kids think twice about, you know, shooting that corner three. Or if you could block one of those, all of a sudden now they're putting it on the floor, which is what you want. You want teams to try to dribble attack your 1-3-1. And so that evolution started, and we started playing around with having a big on the bottom and then a smaller guy in the middle of it who's plugging the penetration lanes a little bit. And I think the key is is the personnel issue is, do you have someone that can play that baseline spot who's got some length? And do you have someone who can play the top spot who has great anticipation and hands and has a high IQ and feel for the game? Because those two spots are the ones, if you don't have a player that you can plug in those two spots, then it's not going to work for you.
Oh. Coach, I know, you know, it's part of your non-negotiables is skill development. I know you spend a lot of time and energy on that. Can you talk about some of the things you do within your skill development program in the off season? What do you do in season? What does that look like?
Well, off season, you know, they changed the rule, so it's open period, so you can work with more kids, which has been great. You know, I the rule of two, you only work with two guys. Now all of a sudden you can work with more guys, and we spend all of our time on offensive skill development. We're not doing closeouts in the open period or working on defensive fundamentals. We focus on trying to get up as many shots as we can get up. Because if your team can really shoot the ball, you got a chance to be pretty good. And the other piece of it is, can you finish at the rim? You know, and do you have that toughness? And we've been trying the last couple of years trying to play more out of jump stops and on balance. And can you get in the paint and handle the ball? So we spend a lot of time. That's usually what our open period workouts would look like, is offensive skill development, a ton of it, and then we would play a little bit, maybe play out of a ball screen action. In season, when you're in practice, we try to make sure we find time to shoot every day in practice. You know, being a basketball junkie and a kid who grew up loving basketball, you know, my mindset was always players are made in the off season and you should earn the ride and you should, and I think that's true, but you better be shooting because you're going to have a kid that plays football who comes in and you need them. And, you know, right out of the gates, their jump shot's not looking too good. You better be putting in 20, 30 minutes of shooting and practice every day. And so we try to make sure that we put time in for individual skill development during our season and not just make it all team-oriented stuff.
Yeah, I know some coaches do this. So do you have like a green light, like a shooter's card? Do you do anything like that or have anything where kids earn the right to shoot in a game?
You know, I've done that. I think I've tried just about everything as a coach, right? You find ways. It was funny, just the other day I was going through my basketball stuff and I found we would track all the three-point shooting in practice. So every time we shot, we would track it and we'd post it. And I had Caleb Herzberg from our first state tournament team, and Caleb Dodra had a great team that year, and just, you know, shooting 56, 70% from in practice. So we'd track it and post it. So I found is every team's a little bit different. And so with some teams, we'll put some parameters together on how they earn the right to be green light shooters. And on other teams, like, everybody already knows who the green light shooter is, right? It's not like, oh boy, you better earn the right. They're like, we need to get that guy the ball more. You know, Brock Henry was the player of the year for us. There wasn't anyone on our team going, coach, does he have a shooting license to shoot? Like, we want to give him more shots. And so it just varies from year to year. But I think as you see needs come up, I try to fill those needs with that group.
Yeah. Do you teach and talk about shot selection at all? Maybe not in your skill development workouts, but with your team, and how do you kind of grade shot selection?
Yeah, we talk a lot about shot selection. And you know, the biggest thing that's hard is you don't want kids afraid to shoot, right? Afraid to play.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so finding that balance between, all right, I want you confident and I want you ready to shoot, but it doesn't mean that I want you to shoot it every time you catch it. And with each kid, it's a little bit different. And so finding that kind of that sweet spot of developing that understanding of, all right, time, possession, where are we at? You know, I'm a big proponent. I love transition threes. But if you're a 10% three-point shooter, I don't love them that much anymore. So we're trying to teach those kids that, you know, play to your strength. And I think that's the message that I try to really ingrain in the kids is play to your strength, play to your strength. So they understand what that is. And then you build that trust in, right, that accountability factor. Mm-hmm. So if you're a 10% three-point shooter, that's not a good shot for you because we want to be successful as a team, not just you scoring points. And when you get that to that point where kids have bought into that, then you got a chance to be a tough out and a good team.
Yeah. You know, Coach, this year has been really strange for all of us, probably extra strange, right? You took a sabbatical. You came back. You probably figured you were going to get ready for summer ball. But all of the pandemic stuff happened, and now we're kicked it all the way back to May for the start of our season. So how are you kind of keeping your kids engaged, and how are you preparing for what will likely be probably the strangest Oregon high school basketball season in recent memory?
Well, right now I just have my fingers crossed that we can have some form of a season. Now, there's a couple of the seniors who as sophomores played for me that are great kids, and I love them, and I want to see them have an opportunity to finish their high school career on a positive note. So I'm very hopeful that we can have a season. As far as, you know, what I've done, you know, last spring we tried to do some Zoom stuff, and I'll be honest, like what's happening at Southridge right now is we're trying to rebuild. I mean, it was not a great season for the interim coach last year and with the players, and it, you know, it's tough to see that and be on the outside watching that happen. And so the engagement from top to bottom within our high school program, it's been tough to get kids going a little bit because it's a Zoom workout. So how exciting is that? It's, you're not in the gym, you're doing something. So we tried some of that, and we tried a little bit in the fall. At this point, I just try to stay in touch with our kids, and I text with a lot of our older guys and key guys, and you know, I talk with my staff, but I don't know exactly how to prepare. When you look at 1 week, the plan is 1 week, and then you play games. If you've got some good ideas, send them my way. I'm not sure what that looks like, other than just doing the best we can, right? And just be excited right. that we get a chance to play.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's what we're all feeling. That's why I asked the question, see what ideas we can come up with, because it'll be strange. Yeah, for sure. I'm sure we're all going to have to pare down some stuff, and we'll be more just grateful that we get a chance to play and less trying to, you know, figure out all the X's and O's, maybe.
Yeah.
And just get to play. So.
Keep it simple is going to be my mindset for sure. Just keep it as simple as you can. It'll feel like summer ball, but yeah. Someone actually keeps track of the win-loss record. I don't know. Maybe some
right.
kind of combination of that.
Yeah, it's going to be a weird hybrid season in that respect. All right, we're going to take another break. When we return, Coach Vessel will try to beat the shot clock here on the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast.
Stay up to date with the Oregon Basketball Coaches Association on social media at facebook.com/OregonBCA or on Twitter at @OrHoopCoaches.
Welcome back to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. We're talking with Coach Phil Vessel, boys basketball coach at Southridge High School. Coach, for my next set of questions, I'm going to put you up against the shot clock. I'm going to put 35 seconds on a timer. And I'm going to ask you some rapid-fire questions that should take or have 1 to 2 word answers. And we're going to see how many questions we can get through in that 35 seconds.
All right.
Sound good?
Sounds good.
All righty. Timer starting now. Do you think Oregon High School basketball should have a shot clock?
Yes.
Should it be implemented at the sub-varsity levels?
No.
If you're up three with less than 10 seconds, do you foul?
Sometimes.
How big of a lead do you need before you pull off a press?
Mid-fourth quarter, up 15.
What's your favorite way to guard on ball?
Fight over and drop the screener's defender.
Do you think the high school three-point line should be moved back?
Yeah. Yeah, it sounds good.
How do you celebrate after a big win?
We always clap it up, whether it's a big win or any win. We always clap it up and celebrate.
What's one word officials would use to describe you?
I don't know if I want to cuss. No, I would hope respectful.
Respectful. Good. That's time. Good work, Coach. That was a good possession there. Good possession. So, Coach, as you know, obviously the shot clock is a hot topic issue, not only in our state, but across the country at the high school level. You had mentioned being in favor of the shot clock. Can you elaborate on that answer a little bit?
I just think it would make the games more exciting, because what happens right now, and it's, you know, when you maybe don't have as much talent, you kind of take the air out of the ball a little bit. And so when you play quarters, there's a minute 30 to go in the first quarter, and now the team's holding for one shot. So how many possessions did we just lose, especially if you do that again in the second quarter or the third quarter, or you get in the fourth quarter and a team's got a four-point lead and they're going four corners with 5 minutes to go. I think it allows kids to get more opportunity to play basketball, and I would love for our state to embrace that in the playmaking and in the purity of the game.
Yeah, you also mentioned maybe being in favor of moving the three-point line back. What are your thoughts on that? Why would you be in favor of that?
I just think any way we can create more space on the floor would be great, right? Create a little bit more space for kids to play, more opportunity for kids to play off the bounce. And for me, it's always about the kids and being able to highlight what they can do. And so if you create that space, then I think it gives them more freedom to play.
Yeah. Absolutely. What is your favorite team bonding activity that you guys do?
So we do a scavenger hunt every year. It's evolved dramatically over the years. It went literally from a scavenger hunt where you would go find all these cool things and do all these things to now it's more like I divide my team into two groups, right? I have a captain in each group and they go out and it's more doing, you know, like a choreographed dance or the best dunk or the best, you know, kind of team building things. And then we come back and meet at my house and we tally up the scores. And it's become a really fun, important part of our season. And it's usually towards the end of the season. So it's like this kind of culminating event that we do before we get into the playoffs. And a lot of the guys talk about it. And I've got some great video of kids over the years doing funny things.
That's awesome. I like that idea. How do you choose team captains?
That's a combination for us. So oftentimes we always have our kids vote, but some years our coaches also will vote and play a little bit more of a role in it. I think you want to empower your players and have them recognize that they have to take ownership for it. So I want to make sure that they have a voice in it with at the same time as a coach, making sure that those, you know, every once in a while I'll appoint a captain as the year progresses that maybe didn't get voted in. So it can vary a little bit, but you definitely want to make sure your players have a voice.
Yeah, what expectations do you have for your captains? Do you have like a list of duties? Do you sit them down at the beginning of the year or after they've been named a captain? What does that process look like?
Well, typically in the fall, I start meeting with guys who I think have a chance to be a captain or returning players that are not playing a fall sport, and we start doing what I call a leadership academy. And we start talking about the different aspects of leadership and what that looks like and maybe even talk about situations and go through this process so they can recognize what leadership is, right? And I try to ingrain in them that service leadership is what it's about. So, you know, you're the guy that's got the ball bag and taking it to the bus or filling the water bottles for the team, or you're the first guy on the floor and you're sweeping the floor because it's important to you. And, you know, a couple years ago, Philip Fullerton, who had a great year for us and is playing up at Seattle Pacific right now, and, you know, is going to have a great college career. It sticks out in my head one time. I'm like, we're on the bus. I'm like, where's Phil? And one of the players is like, oh, he's filling water bottles. He's made sure they're getting full. That's kind of what, you know, that was a whole season for us right there, was your best player is making sure everything is getting done right. And that's to me what leadership looks like.
Do you have a favorite drill?
We play gap defense. So probably one of my favorite drills is we do an active gap drill, which, you know, we do it almost every day from different spots on the floor. But I would say every season I find a drill that's a time drill that has a goal to it, right? So it's not very long, maybe a minute, maybe 2 minutes, and there's a certain goal that we have to achieve. And I love to do that, especially when you have practice right after school, just to get everybody focused and, you know, kind of let go of the day. And, you know, it varies. We've had a half court lay-in drill we've done. I've got a full court one, passing and lay-in drill. It kind of depends on the team and which one kind of resonates with them. But I love having something that's timed with a goal just to get the mindset ready to go for practice, right? You do it early. If you don't get it, you know, maybe we got a couple down and backs. But if you get it, it sets that stage. All right, let's go. We got to make sure we're present for practice right now.
I love it. Well, Coach, good stuff. I think that's all I have for you today. I want to say thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. We really appreciate it.
Well, I enjoyed it. It's been an interesting pandemic for sure. And anytime I can find someone to talk hoops with, because my wife, you know, I love her and she loves me, but she doesn't really want to talk hoops with me too much. My son puts up with it and talks hoops with me, but he's not necessarily a basketball junkie. So I appreciate you taking the time and giving me an opportunity to talk hoops.
If you have any follow-up questions or want to get a hold of Coach Vessel, you can find his contact information in the episode description. We hope you'll join us next time here on the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. Until then, coach them up.
Thank you for listening to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. Is there a coach you'd like to hear from or a topic you'd like to hear us discuss? You can write us a message on the Anchor website or send us an email at OregonBasketballCoaches@gmail.com. You can also subscribe to this podcast on Spotify.